41 degrees in downtown Denver, Colorado. Good evening, Colorado, to you, and happy Monday. Third hour of the program begins now, the 30th of October, Halloween Eve. Some call it Mischief Night, Devil's Night, Hellish Night. I just call it a Monday night. That begins our final week together as part of the farewell tour. Thank you to Jimmy Sangenberger, my friend and colleague. No one's done better work on covering the Denver Public Schools Board of Education. His column in the Denver Gazette tomorrow deals with, yet you got to squeeze it in under the wire, another apparent, unnecessary, ridiculous, Day Anderson taxpayer fleecing trip, this time representing the Denver Public Schools Board of Education at an education conference in a pretty nice place. In fact, if after retirement I could afford to live there, I would, and that would be my hometown, San Diego, California. Yeah, apparently Tay returned last night. One final screw the taxpayer. But thank you to Jimmy. His song, we'll have to replay that, Jim, on Friday. Jimmy wrote a song. Da-da-da-da-da. That was pretty good. Coming up as part of the farewell tour, we have one of, I would say, arguably, and there's not too many ways in which there could be some, you know, ardent arguing. Probably, all things considered, definitely top three guest of all time on the Steph and Tubbs Show since our birth, February 5th, 2018. Our musicologist, our music expert, Vinny Marino, will talk with him coming up in just a moment. And you know what? We got it in under the wire. Very, very happy to say that I have been telling you years and years with him on the air, with him off the air, that we will, in fact, sometime have him on when it has nothing to do with a musician, somebody connected with music, producer or musician otherwise. I promised we're going to try to get him when it doesn't have anything to do with death. And that's what we'll do in just a few moments. 303-696-1971 is our number. Text the studio. Thank you to those of you who have texted via the free-to-download app, especially a couple of first-time-ever texts to the studio. I will try to get to a couple of those, and I certainly try to respond to each and every one. Welcome to our potential live stream global audience listening via the app or the website. Social media, you can follow us still at Tubbs Show, T-U-B-B-S Show, Facebook and Twitter /X. And, of course, Jim puts up every hour of every program commercial break free. Now, just because we're not going to talk about a musician's death, if you grew up, and for me it was just post-college in the mid to late 90s, you certainly know this.
Rachel and I hired a male nanny.
You got a man who's a nanny? You got a Manny?
Matthew Perry played the wisecracking Chandler Bing on Friends for its entire 10-season run, a role that shot him to fame at 24 years old.
Could I be more sorry?
30 years later, his sudden death came as a shock. 54-year-old Perry was found unresponsive Saturday in a jacuzzi at his Los Angeles home.
No foul play is suspected in the sudden death of beloved actor Matthew Perry, according to detectives.
Page 23, Rescue 23, MS 9 on radio. Respond to the drowning.
He was found dead at his Los Angeles area home Saturday of an apparent drowning. Police set up a white tent in the backyard of the home next to a pool.
He was very nice. He had redone this house for like a couple of years, you know. And he was finally moving in.
Cristian Benavides, CBS News.
Matthew Perry, just 54 years old. Over the weekend in Denver and Decay, we'll get to Vinny in just a moment. Over the weekend, Denver police redistributed because they hadn't done it. They put out for the first time, and certainly the DA's office has seen this. All of the top brass within Denver police. They've seen this, and they released the two most recent officer-involved shootings in Denver and Decay. This one from earlier this month at 46th and York. There's a guy, he's acting suspicious, he's in the middle of the street, he's not listening to commands. There's a dog that keeps following him, and this is what happened.
Drop it now!
Drop it! Come on, bro, it's not worth it! Just drop it!
Drop it with it! How can we help you?
You pointed at me, we're going to shoot you.
I asked you that!
Drop it!
How can we help you? What do you need?
Drop the gun! Drop the gun!
Shots fired.
Hands out to the side.
Let me get
your hands to the side.
Keep going.
Hands to the side.
I got fucking need to go ahead. God damn it.
Don't cuff him up. Don't cuff him up. Who's got a tourniquet on him?
I do.
So the man who was shot survived. You say you want to be a cop. You say it's an easy job. Yeah, no. And then there are the calls from a place like the Whole Foods on Wewata. Not too many blocks from Coors Field, right near Union Station. This call earlier this month. Dude in the deli area near the freezers carrying, I've got to say, I've seen a lot of police surveillance video, body cam images in my career. This is one of the longer knives. It had a 13-inch blade. So you want to be a cop, huh? Yeah, there's no such thing as a routine traffic stop, a routine call, because you just never know. That guy also survived, and maybe fortunately for the suspects, maybe unfortunately for the rest of Denver and Decay, it is now up to Cragatha District Attorney Beth McCann. Cragatha McCann will determine whether or not those officer-involved shootings were in fact justified. 303-696-1971. 13 minutes after 6 o'clock in this, the final hour of our final Monday together. Later on this hour, our final film. We bumped it from Friday because Jim played dad, as he should have. Jim's suggestion, we'll have our Friday Homestretch film review, final review on this Monday from 2018, starring Paul Rudd and a bunch of other big actors. Jeff Daniels in The Catcher Was a Spy from 2018. Clips, trivia, and more coming up later this hour. But ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to welcome back to the program, not connected with a musician's death, your favorite and mine, our musicologist, our music expert who has been so, so kind to us over the years, Vinnie Marino. Brother, it's kind of bittersweet talking to you tonight. I got to be honest with you.
Well, I tell you, there's nothing I enjoyed more than getting a call from one of your producers or getting an email from you saying you want to come on tonight. And I'm always happy to do that. Unfortunately, most of the time, as you said, it was a death notice for a musician. Well, we've talked about some other stuff as well, some happy things. Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
So are you ready to role play a little bit?
Sure.
Okay. This is going to be good because one of my favorite, and I'm not blowing smoke, one of my favorite moments on this program, I think, was very, very, very like impromptu, and it just happened. It blossomed. And that's the beauty. And I know you in your radio career, you would agree. The things that are just kind of organic and happen. It was when we started talking like this. Why in the world did they used to talk like this in the newsreels? So I should have set it up better. But Vinny joins us live from Grover's Mill, New Jersey. 85 years ago, Vinny, I want to talk about this briefly.
The Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations present Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater on the air in The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells. Ladies and gentlemen, the director of the Mercury Theater and star of these broadcasts, Orson Welles.
We know now that in the early years of the 20th century, this world was being watched closely by intelligences greater than man's, and yet as mortal as his own. We know now that as human beings busied themselves about their various concerns, they were scrutinized and studied, perhaps almost as narrowly as a man with a microscope might scrutinize the transient creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water.
Arguably one of the greatest, I don't know, Vinny, would you call it the greatest radio stunt, a prank, live radio theater? It was October 30th, 1938, 85 years ago today, that a 23-year-old named Orson Welles and his compadres at the Mercury Theater, they came up with that, and holy cow.
Well, it is one of those amazing moments. Obviously, you couldn't get away with that today.
Right.
You have to be, we'll be back with more Martians after this.
Here's a Viagra commercial.
Yeah, exactly. Well, first of all, 1938, there was no television. So the only real form of entertainment was the radio. So people gathered around the radio and actually listened to it together as a family. And it was so well produced, War of the Worlds, because Orson Welles was a genius, that, of course, people actually believed it was happening. I mean, not only in the country, but all over the world, people were hearing about this. And, of course, today it'd be like, yeah, right. But back then, it was completely possible.
Did, you know, you're an East Coast guy, so over the years, and maybe when it first came on your radar, was there a little, maybe as, you know, the story gets out, you know, this little thing turns into a gigantic thing? I mean, I can't imagine, you know, human nature doing such a thing, exaggerating, but I've seen many, many over the year, especially the last 5 to 10 years, where, no, the hype and hysteria wasn't really as bad as some legend would have it. What do you hear?
I totally think that people were very, very afraid. I think they thought it was real because it just sounded so good.
Yeah.
I mean, the authoritative voices and everything. I mean, probably no one paid attention to what you just played, which was Orson Welles setting up what you were about to hear.
Exactly.
So if you tuned in a little bit later, and all you heard was were these fake news broadcasts, you didn't know they were fake. You thought it was actually happening.
Yeah. Did we ever determine why they talked like this back then?
Well, actually, you know what? I did research that.
Oh,
and it
good.
Turns out that the microphones they used back then were suited more for a mid-range voice than the usual radio voice we're used to, the deep basso profundo. So that's why all radio.
I don't have
like
that.
This.
I don't have that deep basso fortorio, whatever thingy you just said.
Basso profundo.
Yeah,
no, I don't either. but it was, you know, the mid range, this kind of tone that really cut through on the radio.
Hey Jim, should we do the rest of this program like this? What do you think in there behind the glass?
Yes, I think we should. Absolutely.
Vinny,
just like this.
See, it's organic. I mean, like Jim, did we rehearse that? No. Does it deserve a rim shot? Yes, in my final 4.5 days of work. Our musicologist, our music expert, Vinny Marino, joins us. How do you become such a student of music? And I was telling some, I previewed you last week a couple of times during the week. I'm like, here's what's coming up, and we've got great guests as part of the farewell tour. And I here's how I described you. White Album, Beatles, thoughts. Back in Black, AC/DC, thoughts. You could go, how do you get to this point? I mean, what was it about music, and you just become a voracious reader, I'm assuming, and just a student of of pop culture and art and music from the classics to, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, modern day.
Well, it's all of those things. My best friend when I was a little kid was a transistor radio, which I would keep under my pillow at night and listen to WABC here in New York. And I said, even when I was 7 years old, this is what I want to do. I want to be on the radio. And music just came part and parcel with that. I mean, I always had records. I mean, when I was a kid, the way my parents would get me to do well on tests was I'd say, well, we'll buy you a 45 if you get an A. And then the collection just built up over the years. And I like minutiae. I mean, record labels and catalog numbers and little things that no one really cares about except real music nuts, real music aficionados. And you and I are in the same business, of course, and there are up times and down times, times you're out of work for long periods of time. And it's at those periods, which I'm stuck in one now, that I say to myself, why didn't I go to law school?
I can tell you because you would not have, you would have, to me, from what I know of you, and you're so good on the air, you're an encyclopedia, et cetera, I don't think you would have had the itch scratched.
You know what? Probably not, but I probably could have done something with both. But the problem is when you're a lawyer, there's not much opportunity to be out of work. Whereas what we do, we don't get paid very well. We do it for the love of it. And when I was a college professor, I would tell my students, if you don't love this business, it will kill you. So you absolutely have to love it.
Yeah.
You know, the bad pay, the bad benefits, the bosses you can't stand, you know, the out of work periods. It's just one of those things where we're, not to use a bad pun, but we're wired a certain way. And you're right. There really isn't anything else we could do with our lives.
Right.
When we get together, when radio nuts get together, we all have the same knowledge, the same shorthand of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cart machines, old microphones, stories of going off the air. I mean, we all kind of have that collective knowledge.
The wax pencils, the razor blades, the reel-to-reel machines. Our musicologist, music expert, Vinnie Marino, he is a, if I dare say, to our friends and potential fans listening, I mean, every time you have been on, I get either an email, a text, emails and texts, social media hits. I love that guy. I wish he was on. So I want to ask you a couple of questions.
Sure.
These will be the, you know, who's your favorite, who's your not, whatever. The interview that surprised you most, maybe in the entertainment world, that made the, I'll take it a different way. You either didn't want to do because you've heard that you know, person A, B, or C, they were a total jerk or they didn't care or whatever. Somebody who surprised you that maybe, and you know, obviously maybe a name that you would, people would know.
Surprised me in the sense that they were great.
Yeah,
they
were good.
Awful?
Yeah. Well, we'll get to the awful, but somebody that maybe you had low expectations, you didn't know if they were going to be good, and they turned out to be, it was a wow interview.
Well, I'd have to say probably Tom Hanks. That was a real pleasure. We do this thing in the entertainment business called press junkets, which is basically when a bunch of press people, radio, print press, what have you, get together and see a movie and then interview the stars afterwards. Now, I figured Hanks was, I mean, this was a movie called Road to Perdition, which, you know, came out, I think, in early 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a press junket, and I figured, you know, he would do a press conference, you know, big room, tons of people, you know, him standing at a podium. No, he actually did the small groups of like four or five journalists. And came in and sat down and was happy to talk about anything. And I was working on an Elvis Presley special at the time for ABC News Radio, and I asked him his opinion about Elvis. So on this radio show, I had an exclusive clip of Hanks
Wow.
talking about Elvis Presley. So you didn't think that a guy as big as he is would be that friendly and fun, but he totally was.
You know what I find interesting about that is who would probably 20 years later go on to play Colonel Parker?
Indeed. Absolutely.
That's crazy.
It kind of those weird things. By the way, he was not an Elvis fan, just so you know.
Really? All right, let's go ahead.
No, but you figure because he said, when he was coming up in the 60s, Elvis was pretty much done. You know, he was making the bad movies. He wasn't making music. So that's why Hanks says he was more into the Beatles than Dave Clark Five.
Yeah, although Hanks does strike me as somebody, doesn't he have his label? Isn't it Playtone?
Playtone.
Yeah. So he's obviously got something that, I mean, and what's that one, that thing you do? Was that?
Oh, amazing.
I loved that movie. Loved it.
Yeah. I mean, Hanks was at the point in his career, and a lot of some stars get to this, where they tell the studio, I'll make one for you, but then I got to make one for me. And that was that thing you do. It was a pet project for him. And it was so brilliant. I talked about minutia before. Down to the tiniest detail, he got right in that movie. He started it, he directed it, and he wrote it.
Yeah.
An unbelievable piece of film.
Hey, are you good for one more segment?
Of course.
Okay, so I want to know on the other side, the biggest jerk. Actor, actress. Listen to him say, no problem. We'll put our, as the farewell tour continues, one of our Hall of Fame guests over the years, Vinny Marino, and formerly my colleague at ABC News, and just is an encyclopedia and a true gift to the radio airwaves. On this, the 85th anniversary of
the Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations present Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater on the air in The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells.
We will be back with Vinny coming up next on 710 KNUS. Midway through the 6 o'clock hour, coming up next segment, our final film review from 2018, The Catcher Was a Spy. We'll have clips, trivia, and more. One more segment, though, with our Hall of Famer, our guest, our musicologist, music expert, Vinny Marino. He joins us, and I know you can do this, so I'm going to ask you. That was Staying Alive, obviously. The Bee Gees, right, to me, I still don't know if, as we speak, that group gets enough credit and the harmonies and the incredible stuff that they did. And now I think it's only Barry that's remaining, right?
That is correct. That is correct. Robin and Morris passed away. Barry remains. And the thing about the Bee Gees is that if you follow their very early career, they were basically, you know, they came over with the British invasion. I mean, they were born in England. They moved to Australia. A lot of people think they're an Australian band, but they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And then came back to England, signed with a label, and had some pretty good pop hits. And then that faded away for a while. Then they had a resurgence in the early 70s with How Can You Mend a Broken Heart, which was a big number one. But their albums weren't doing very well. Remember, the early 70s was sort of an album era. And then comes this little movie, Saturday Night Fever. And because Robert Stigwood, their manager, was producing the movie, he asked them to write some songs for the movie. As it turns out, many of the songs that people assume were written for the movie were not. They were for the next Bee Gees album. So they were headed for that heavy R&B disco sound anyway.
Vinny Marino is our guest. I knew I could throw him a Bee Gees. So last segment, you know, you had maybe low expectations, people you've interviewed in your past, musicians, actors in the entertainment world. So if you are just joining us, Vinny's kind of surprise was Tom Hanks. And you were very quick to say, you know who the biggest jerk was.
And it remains the biggest jerk to this day. a man simply known as Sting.
Really?
What an absolute tool. Oh, my God.
Was he doing some kind of tantric, whatever that stuff is?
Where... Tantric. Yeah,
tantric. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't think so, clearly. Tell me the story.
All right. Well, look, I mean, he came up to ABC News Radio, where you and I both worked. And I don't forget what he was promoting at the time, an album or something, which is probably why he did press. And he just came in with this attitude, assuming that I knew nothing, that he was going to be bored. And
like, wait a minute, time out. Like, you knew nothing about what he was going to talk about, or you knew nothing because you were just an idiot?
Well, because, look, I'll give him this. You and I both know this. Most music and entertainment reporters are hacks.
True.
They really don't know what they're talking about. They ask the same questions And obviously the artist, the musician, the actor, actress has to deal with these idiots asking dumb questions.
Over and over and over.
Exactly. So, I mean, look, he didn't know me, but, you know, I do my homework. I know what I'm talking about. But even 5 minutes in, when it was pretty clear that I did my homework for the interview, he was still being a jerk. And that really made me angry. It's like, I mean, I wasn't going to tell him off because it was staying and I needed the interview. But I will reveal this.
Yes.
Well, he might have been into the tantric stuff. He certainly wasn't into showering.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I'd call him Stink after that. Boy, was he. I had a spray. You remember the little studios we had?
Yes, they were not big.
I mean, I had to spray that thing for a while just to get the Sting odor out of there.
Wow.
You know
I did.
You know what? I get.
Go ahead.
I guess he's so into himself, he figures even his body odor is amazing.
Wow. Anybody a close second?
To being a jerk? Yeah, Joe Jackson.
Oh, I've never been a fan of his. I'm not surprised. No.
Well, see, now, I always was. I was still, and you know what? I remain a huge Joe Jackson fan. But he
you
was just
there, stepping out. I can't stand that song. Sorry.
Well, I was surprised that he was such a jerk, and I was annoyed by it. But you know what? You have to separate art from artists.
So true.
You
know? So true. How I close? Mean, how? No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, how many people were not happy with Roger Waters' political bent, let's say?
Yeah.
Who would say, I'm never listening to Pink Floyd again. And I would ask them, are you a Pink Floyd fan? Yeah, one of my favorite bands. Why would you punish yourself because this guy has views you don't agree with?
Totally true. Totally true. Let me throw out a couple more. Did you ever, and look, the answer for me is maybe one out of who I'm about to draw. Did you ever come across Madonna?
Never met her in person, no.
How about Michael Jackson?
I was in the same room with him.
What was your take?
Some kind of, well, he didn't really say anything. I mean, we were told he's going to come in, you can take your pictures, but don't say anything because he's not going to say anything. But it was a presence. I mean, when he walked into the room, it was sort of like the temperature changed, you know? I mean, he had that kind of presence. It's like, oh, my God, I'm 6 feet away from Michael Jackson.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if I ever shared this with you. So when I was at ABC, and it was in the early 2000s, he's up, and he's in a Santa Maria courtroom, and, you know, facing allegations of Neverland, et cetera. Do you remember when he jumped up on that car?
I don't know if you remember that. Yes.
I was about 20 feet from that car and I
no
couldn't.
Kidding.
Yeah. To this day, I still can't believe that. And I mean, I'm well into my news career by this point, and I'm still kind of in this mode of, as a reporter, going, that's Michael freaking Jackson. And he is on top of a car coming out of a courtroom where the allegations against him aren't too good. Granted, innocent until proven guilty. And then, you know, who else? How about this? Because of the death of Matthew Perry over the weekend, any of the Friends crew?
No, never met any of them. But what's not getting mentioned in all the various obits and news reports about Matthew Perry, Friends, okay, fine. His finest acting work was on an NBC series that really didn't make it past one season, Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
Huh.
It was an Aaron Sorkin show. He wrote it. You know, he created it. And when I saw that Matthew Perry was going to be in it, I was like, really? Can that guy handle Sorkin? And he did. It was such a brilliant show. And the reason why it failed was because it was up against another NBC show about a late-night entertainment program, 30 Rock.
Hmm.
30 Rock got all the kudos and all the advertising and all the great ratings, and Studio 60 just kind of fell like a lead balloon, which is unfortunate because I thought it was a superior series. I mean, look, I'm a Sorkin fan. Anything he does, I'm into. But, yeah, there's an example of a guy who had tremendous acting chops but will only be remembered for Chandler, which, I mean, I'm sorry. It's not exactly Shakespeare.
Yeah. Our musicologist, music expert, entertainment reporter, one of my favorite guests, my former colleague and currently and will remain my friend as we do the farewell tour, Vinnie Marino. Who else am I not asking you about that I'm like, if I didn't, you'd go, oh, you dummy, you should have asked me about this.
Well, and that Paul McCartney.
Okay. Let's take this show to 11, Jim. What was Sir Paul like?
I got to tell you, I was working for a classical radio station in New York at the time, Bach, Beethoven, Mozart. And it was at the time when McCartney had written and recorded the Liverpool Oratorio, one of his first classical pieces. And we did the world premiere airing of the album on the air. And then it was performed at Carnegie Hall.
Wow.
So we got to go and see him. And there was a small press conference. And the way it worked was Paul and Linda were standing together, and this circle of security was around him. And when it was time for you to go next, the circle would open, you would walk in, and the circle would close behind you, and you had your 5 minutes with Paul. So I noticed as I'm waiting in line to go up and meet him and talk to him, all of the reporters before me are totally ignoring Linda. I mean, just like she wasn't even there. So while Paul was finishing with a reporter, I went up to Linda. Hey, Linda, how are you? You know, just started a conversation with her. You know, she's a New Yorker, and, you know, we just had a fantastic chat. And when Paul was done with this reporter, he walks over and says, oh, I see you've met. And Linda says, oh, yeah, Vinnie and I go way back, and she put her arm around me. And I could tell he really appreciated it.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. You know what? I want to finish on that if you didn't.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, when you meet Paul McCartney, you get Paul McCartney. You know, you're like, oh, great, nice to meet you. Hello. You get Paul. You get Beatle Paul, you know?
Oh, man.
He knows that's what people want.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome.
And he gives it to you. And for those 5 minutes, I was in heaven.
I want to end on this, and I could, sure. Again, we could talk for, you and I could fill a show for a few weeks or months. 50 years since these albums, 50 years this year, speaking of Sir Paul, 50 years since Band on the Run, McCartney and Wings, 50 years since The Dark Side of the Moon, Pink Floyd, 50 years, Let's Get It On, Marvin Gaye. What else? Countdown to Ecstasy, Steely Dan. Quadrophenia, The Who. Houses of the Holy, Led Zeppelin. Inner Visions, Stevie Wonder. Al Green's Call Me. What else am I? A couple of them, actually. Red Rose Speedway, McCartney and Wings, second release in 73. A Wizard, A True Star, Todd Rundgren. There Goes Ryman Simon, by Paul Simon. A Passion Play by Jethro Tull. Mind Games by John Lennon. For Every Man, Jackson Browne. I mean, I could go, literally, the list is unbelievable. My question to you is, are we ever going to get back into the days of old? Or are we just lucky to live where we can look back and in 50 years later, see these types of, because I just don't see it in today's, Imagination by Gladys Knight and the Pips. All those, Abandoned Luncheonette, Hall & Oates, all those 50 years ago this year, I just don't see today's music even holding a candle.
I completely agree, and for a number of reasons. I'll make it short. The main reason is no one listens to albums anymore.
Mm.
Everyone listens to downloads or Spotify. No one's really sitting down and listening to music anymore. I mean, I do, you do, but we're old. So we come from that period. We were alive in 73. So, you know, we know from that period when every week a different fantastic album came out. We also don't have the musicianship that we used to have back then, because back then, if you were a musician, you actually played your instrument. You learned how to play it. You played it well. You went into a recording studio with the other musicians or a band, and you knocked it out till it was perfect.
Mm.
Today, you can correct anything with a computer program.
Are you afraid of AI, what it could do to the music industry?
I am afraid of it. I'm afraid of AI for a number of things, movies, television, and music.
Yep, social media.
But I think social media. But let me say this. In the same way, we'll still be talking about most of those artists 50 years from now. We'll still be talking about the run that Taylor Swift had.
Mm-hmm.
She's, you know, a one in a million shot. She's worth over $1 billion. And I don't begrudge her one penny. Mm-hmm. She's earned it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's a quintessential pop star. She got tired of doing country music. She told her managers, I want to be Britney Spears. And she did. And look at what she's accomplished. And her demographic is, you know, 8 to 80. Everyone knows who she is. Everyone likes her music. She writes brilliant songs. And when she puts on a concert, it's like going to a Broadway show because every song is a different production number.
I'm going to end with this, with a drum roll. Vinny Moreno, one of our all-time Mount Rushmore Hall of Fame guests on the Steph and Tubbs Show. Are you a Swiftie?
Absolutely.
And there you have it. Brother, I will be in touch with you offline. And I'm speaking on behalf of a lot of people who text in when you're on the air and then subsequently a day later I'll get, hey, thanks for having that guy on. I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you for the time that you've given this program to me personally, to our audience here in Denver. And I'll definitely be in touch as Friday is my final show, but that doesn't mean I stop texting you. So thank you, brother.
My pleasure, and best of luck to you, whatever you wind up doing. Denver is losing a unique voice.
Thank you, brother. Unique voice. It's a new, unique guest right there on this, the 85th anniversary of War of the Worlds. Technically, the War of the World by H.G. Wells. We'll wrap this show up today, our final Monday together, with the Friday Homestretch film review pushed over to this Monday evening, and that comes up next. Whatever you do, friends, don't mess with Mr. In Between. Final segment of the Monday, final Monday program. Thanks again to our Hall of Famer guest, musicologist, entertainment expert, music expert, Vinny Moreno. Thank you for the text coming in. Most certainly we'll pass those along to Vinny, who has been just so good to all of us over the years. It is time.
That's Hooey Valley, Hooey Hollywood.
Whoops.
Where any office boy or young mechanic can
the final one I miss, the crazy lefty liberal Hollywood, oh well, c'est la vie. From 2018, the final film review, actually Jim's choice. And I had profiled this story, The Catcher Was a Spy. I profiled this last year, the year before, on the American Veteran Show. And it's based on true life events. This film starring Paul Rudd and a cast of characters from 2018, based on a true story, The Catcher Was a Spy.
You're an unusual man, Mr. Bird. You speak seven languages. You're an athlete. You're more than up to the physical requirements of the job.
What job?
Since this war began, we have reason to believe the Germans are working on a fission bomb.
The scientist leading their atomic program is Werner Heisenberg. We must get to him and find out how close the Germans are to a bomb.
And there you go. Paul Giamatti, which I find in this baseball movie. A. Bartlett Giamatti was the former baseball commissioner. It was obviously Paul Giamatti's father. This put out by Palm Star Media. This is one of those that went right to a film festival. Did absolutely one of the worst of all the films we've done in nearly 6 years. The return on investment was horrible. This made less than $1 million. Trust me, it cost more to produce. However, I would consider this a sleeper film, and Paul Rudd is much more than just whatever he was, Ant-Man or what have you.
Two out, top of the third, man on first. Mo Bird, still in at catcher.
15 years in the league and still standing. How long can this guy go on?
I thought even with CGI and all of that, they recreated a 1930s Fenway Park. It was awesome. So he's a baseball player. Mo Berg is incredibly intelligent. And he goes on a global tour. Where does he go right before World War II and the bombing of Pearl Harbor? He goes, plays baseball in Japan. Now, Jim, you gotta, there's no way that they, he was speaking Japanese.
At least he had to only speak one foreign language in this, unless he spoke German too.
He spoke a little German. Okay. He spoke a little German bit. As well. I'm glad.
Did he do a good job?
He did a really good job. I'm glad you picked this film, especially doing the Mo Berg real life story in the American Veteran Show within the past couple of seasons. But the goal here is to go after Werner Heisenberg. And is he close to giving the Germans an atomic weapon? This stars a whole bunch of people. Paul Rudd, Sienna Miller, Jeff Daniels, Tom Wilkinson. He's always great. Guy Pearce, who's one of my favorites. And speaking of accentuate the positive, Guy Pearce from L.A. Confidential. And as mentioned, Paul Giamatti. The film is very good. I mean, they do a great job with costumes, getting it in period. Jeff Daniels is outstanding as well. This ain't a Dumb and Dumber role. And here's where they're thinking, we got to assassinate Heisenberg, perhaps.
Heisenberg will have undercover Gestapo agents watching him, and you can't allow yourself to be captured.
And what does he hand?
A little box.
A little box.
A little cyanide.
Little cyanide capsule in there, just in case this thing goes wrong. My one criticism of this would be, I think it needed not another act, but this film in total is right around 90 minutes. And in a world where these films go on and they're 2.5+ hours, I think I just needed about another 20 minutes or so, but it's good. And in the end, there is the scene outside. Is Mo Berg going to assassinate Heisenberg?
You're an unusual man, Mr. Berg.
Seems to me this game is nearly over.
I cannot mount an attack on my king. So it is over.
Is he going to shoot him? Somebody was shot. But not Heisenberg. Was a would-be assassin. Who was going to shoot Mo Berg.
Who are you?
A student.
A student? Really? A student of what?
Of you.
I see.
It was shot primarily in Prague, which is a wonderful, one of the great cities in the world. Beautiful night photography and cinematography. In the end, Heisenberg is not shot. And in this film, the actor Mark Strong plays a very strong Werner Heisenberg. All right, drum roll, please, as we wrap up. Jim, I want your review as well. I give The Catcher Was a Spy 7 out of 10 catcher's mitts. And you?
I was going to say 7, but I'll one-up you with a half. 7.5. I don't want to be the same. And you think I copied you.
A half of a catcher's mitt. Thank you, Jim. Great job today. That wraps up our final Monday together, friends. Tomorrow, a Halloween special, War of the Worlds. The 4 o'clock hour. Are you kidding me? You can't do that on live and local talk radio. Oh, yes, we can. For Jim and Lori, Stephen Tubbs wishing you a safe and healthy evening. And remember our troops. Good night.